Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Locked On Heat is an intelligent and entertaining daily podcast covering the Miami Heat and the NBA. Like I said, it's daily, five times a week. So subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play, because we'll be there every morning, waiting for you. You can email the show at lockedonheat@gmail.com, where you can send us questions for our weekly mailbag, inquire about advertising, or just say hi. And finally, we're asking you, the listener, to go on iTunes and leave us a rating, and even a review if you're feeling particularly generous. It helps. Now, on to the show. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg, editor at allyoucanheat.com. With me on the other line, as always, an NBA writer at large. It's David Ramil.
I am excited, man, after a several-day hiatus. This is amazing. I feel so good. I feel refreshed. I feel ready to go. And we've got so much to talk about today.
I've just got so many opinions and analysis and stuff that I want to say built up in me over this last week because... You know, we took this week break thinking like, oh yeah, Heat's offseason's over, this is the team, this is how it's going to be. And then all of a sudden, you know, maybe 3 days into the week or whatever it was, wham, Dion Waiters, Waiters Peninsula, it's happening. Dion Waiters signs with the Miami Heat. And all of a sudden, you and I are texting back and forth, but, you know, I'm all on the road. We don't have a lot, we couldn't record a podcast. We tried a couple of things maybe to do in the middle of the week. It didn't work. But here we are. We had a whole week to think about it. And the listeners have been waiting and craving for our opinions on this, so let's just get right into it.
Absolutely. It's nice to see that Pat Riley is listening to our podcast and understands the importance of bringing a guy like Dion Waiters aboard.
How long ago were we talking about Dion Waiters in Miami? Basically as soon as Dwayne Wade left, right?
Yeah, I think that was a good fit. I mean, look, we had always talked about him maybe coming over here as a good kind of backup player to a guy like Wade before we even assumed that Wade would leave. And since his departure... You know, it made a whole hell of a lot of sense. And so, I mean, I personally think it's a great move, and I can't wait to talk about it.
So the Heat signed him for a little bit less than $3 million, what is the room level exception.
That's right.
So he doesn't really count against the salary cap, but he is part of that exception. Now, a lot of people are saying, okay, well, Dion Waiters couldn't get a better deal. The Heat just got him on the cheap because he's washed up. He's a former number 4 overall pick 4 years ago by the Cavaliers, was traded after 2 years to the Thunder and then in the middle of the season in that deal that sent Reggie Jackson to the Pistons and the whole and Enos.
No, that was a separate deal. That was really he was actually acquired. The Reggie Jackson deal came right at the trade deadline. When they shipped him to Reggie Jackson, they shipped him to Detroit, and then they acquired Enes Kanter from Utah in exchange for Kendrick Perkins. The Dion Waiters deal, I think they just traded a second round pick for him, to be honest with you. They were looking to kind of shore up that backup two guard position, which has always been a position of need for the Thunder. And then at the same time, remember that was after LeBron took his midseason break to kind of recover from just back problems. And he wanted to kind of clear the air a little bit. They were, you know, on the move.
He was in the trade. As a part of a three-team trade, traded by the Cavaliers to the Thunder. The Cavaliers traded, oh, you're right. That was part of the Shumpert deal.
Right.
The Shumpert and J.R. Smith deal.
Right.
Yeah, that's how it happened.
Yeah, they had J.R. Smith and Shumpert, so they didn't need Dion Waiters anymore.
And that was okay, and that's what I meant because the first round pick, the Thunder sent a first round pick to the Cavaliers, and that first round pick eventually got the Cavaliers Timofey Mozgov.
Ah, okay. Yeah, it's all making sense. Yeah, who was with Denver before that, correct?
Right.
Wow. A lot has happened in 2 years.
And all of this has happened. Dion Waiters was in Oklahoma for a couple seasons and now he's with the Heat. And he had an interesting offseason. He was a restricted free agent. Kevin Durant leaves.
Is that Pat Riley?
That was Pat Riley. He's like, look, I've got the whole Dion Waiters thing for you. I'll figure it out for you guys, since you guys don't know what you're talking about. So I texted him, talk to you later, Pat.
Nice.
Yeah, he calls me more than he calls Dwayne Wade. So,
zing.
Zing. So, what was I talking about? Oh, he was a restricted free agent, and part of a weird offseason for the Thunder, they lose Durant to the Warriors. A lot of people thought that the Thunder would probably match Dion Waiters. They don't. Dion Waiters becomes an unrestricted free agent, and he's on the open market. But by then, so many teams have used their cap space and kind of have figured out what their team is going to be, and Dion Waiters isn't just like one of those guys you could bring in and be like, we'll use him if we need him. It's like, you sign Dion Waiters, he's one of those guys with hopefully a higher ceiling than what he's played to so far. I mean, a top five pick, you know? And he's just not one of those guys that you just bring in and sits on the end of your bench. Like, if you sign a guy like Dion Waiters, you have to try to carve out a role for him. And so the Heat, losing Dwayne Wade, they had a role for him. And they ended up getting him for a mid-level exception that is going to be, hopefully, a really good deal. I mean, compared to a lot of what these guys are signing for this offseason, someone like Dion Waiters for less than $3 million a year, that's value.
Right. I think, you know, when you look at how he fell into Miami's lap, there's so much going on there. And all of it fits into this really neat narrative about Dion Waiters, the kind of enigmatic personality that everybody loves to make fun of. And you know, with Durant's decision to go to Golden State, Oklahoma City was forced to kind of move very quickly on the fly. And part of that was trying to lock Russell Westbrook into a long-term deal, sign into an extension before he, you know, moves into free agency next summer, or in case they have to trade him at some point this season when his value is at an all-time high and they won't risk losing him the way they did Durant or James Harden, etc. So they had to renounce Dion's cap hold, basically, and kind of say, you know, we renounce his rights, I guess, is exactly what they did, and then kind of making him an unrestricted agent rather than a restricted free agent. So that's why it didn't matter if we offered him a certain amount, they didn't have the right to match it. So he became that unrestricted agent. A lot of teams theoretically want him. We heard rumors about him going to Philadelphia, where he's from, Brooklyn, etc. But all of it fits this, you know, like I said, narrative about Dion, because he winds up signing for so much less money. You know, people assume that with the reported ego of a player like Dion Waiters, that he was going to seek this huge deal. But from what we understood from Pat Riley, he did have more lucrative offers out there. He just wanted to sign with Miami, even if that meant taking a bit of a pay cut.
Even he said it wasn't about the money. He wanted to find a fit. Right. And if you think about a guy like Waiters, yes, he's played for the Cavaliers and the Thunder, two teams that were in the finals or their conference finals last season. But when he's with the Cavs, the Cavs were trash. Right. When he was with the Thunder were very good, but he wasn't necessarily a key part on that team until the playoffs really rolled around. And even then, he wasn't a starter for a majority of the playoffs. So, you know, he didn't have a regular role in Oklahoma City. I think with the Heat, they can offer him regular playing time. They aren't really a team. They're not just a down team like the Cavaliers, where when he was with the Cavs, he was one of those guys that was supposed to elevate the Cavs. Him and Kyrie Irving, right, were supposed to be the backcourt of the future. But the Thunder, there was so much expectations and so much pressure to basically get to and win the NBA Finals that being able to let Dion Waiters be Dion Waiters and let him just kind of patiently figure it out, that opportunity wasn't there. But for the Heat now, with where they stand, they're not an NBA Finals contender like right. The Thunder were last season. They have a role to fill at shooting guard, and we'll talk about whether or not he should be starting or not a little bit later in the podcast, but he will get that opportunity, and you would think that this team is going to be somewhat patient with him, maybe more so than any other team he's ever played with.
Well, he's got a short-term deal. It's 2 years with a player option, which basically, you know, he's looking like so many players before him to make as good an impression as possible so that he can parlay that into a more lucrative deal next summer. And, you know, there's a possibility it'll happen. You know, he's banking on it. He's taking a chance. He's putting it all. He's risking his financial future, you know, but at the same time, it is a good opportunity for him. And you know, it's a smart deal despite what, you know, that he could have gotten more money elsewhere. And that's it's tough to kind of put those things together when you think about Dion, because he's just been through so much over this the short career he's had. He's you know, like you said, when he was with Cleveland, he was supposed to be part of this duo that never quite meshed. There were rumors about in-house turmoil there between him and Kyrie, an alleged incident in the locker room where they got into a fist fight. You know, they didn't achieve the kind of success there. They were supposed to mesh. They didn't quite do so. And then that all changes at the end of – or the start of year three when LeBron returns to Cleveland. And all of a sudden there's heightened expectations there, and Dion doesn't quite fit the mold. And so, you know, you think of him as a me-first player, et cetera. But the reality, I think, is that we saw him kind of mature quite a bit in Oklahoma City. And despite the fact, like you alluded to, that he wasn't a starter, he was a contributor. You know, they've had a very odd lineup. Look, I mean, when you have guys like Durant and Westbrook on there who control so much of what that team does, everybody has to fit a neat categorized role. And that was very difficult for a guy like Dion, who has the skill set to do so much. But he wasn't going to be called on to do as much because, you know, he had Westbrook or Durant on the floor with him so much. But he was a part of very effective lineups there. When they went small ball, he would go in there at the two spot, fit, you know, alongside Westbrook and be able to handle the ball. He can shoot from the perimeter. There's a lot of what he could do well. And he was actually a very nice fit. And we saw him in the playoffs, as you mentioned. You know, he was a real solid contributor, particularly on defense. There were moments there where he was guarding, I think, Draymond Green, you know, in the low post. And you think of a guy like, you know, Draymond, who outweighs him by a good 60 pounds and is probably at least a good 4 or 5 inches taller than Dion Waiters. And Waiters was a very solid defender. I mean, that was very impressive to me. And, you know, I think he's going to be able to contribute greatly here in Miami.
Last year in the playoffs, I mean, he basically played the best he's ever played in his NBA career. Dion Waiters has never posted a positive defensive box plus minus in his entire 4-year career until the playoffs. And that was his first appearance in the playoffs last year.
Absolutely.
And he posted a plus 0.6. I mean, that's not a huge defensive box plus minus number. But right. It's certainly a lot higher than a negative. I mean, he was, for the first time in his career, a positive on the defensive end. He was a plus defender. His 37.5% three-point shooting percentage in the playoffs was the highest he's ever shot.
Mm-hmm.
He had a 52% true shooting percentage, which is very good. And
absolutely.
Given that Waiters has this reputation for being an inefficient player, 52%, that's a career high in the playoffs. And that's in 18 playoff games. That's not a huge sample size, but it's not a small sample size. And that's against the Spurs and the Warriors for a lot of games.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he looked good against tough competition. I mean, and, you know, so much of those numbers are skewed because of, you know, consider what he was doing in Cleveland when he was a starter on a really, really bad Cavaliers team that had zero expectations and was trying to implement these rookies and journeymen and all sorts of players in the wake of LeBron's departure. I mean, it was a bad team. And so you're always going to look poor defensively when you have such a bad team. And you had,
Do you think his role will be closer in Miami? Do you think his role will be closer to that he had with the Thunder or to a rebuilding Cavaliers team?
I think it'll be closer to what he had in the Thunder because I think that Miami's stability and specifically Eric Spoelstra will know how to get to Dion. I think Dion is coachable. We saw that. I saw that up close from Scott Brooks. You know, Scott Brooks, for all the criticism he took, he was very relatable as far as when, you know, being able to interact with players. And he was able to really get to Dion. You saw a lot of moments there that first half season that Brooks and Waiters shared a couple years ago where he was really trying to get through to Dion, explain to him, you know, that there are different expectations for him now and to adjust to the role, whatever that And I think that Dion is coachable. We saw him interacting well with Billy Donovan. We saw really good moments with got superstar egos that match or surpass Dion's own ego in Durant and Westbrook. It's not easy to share a floor with those guys, especially not when you have a third superstar in Serge Ibaka who's calling for the ball.
What was your – and you? I know you've told this story on the podcast before, but your impression from him was that he sees himself as the best player on the floor, or he's got a little bit of like Mario Chalmers on steroids type thing to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, to me, when I first saw him, it was shortly after he had been acquired by Oklahoma City, And there he is in a very good game where the Thunder actually set like franchise highs for scoring in a half, and they absolutely obliterated the Magic team. And then they were there in the locker room, again, sharing it with Ibaka, Westbrook, and Durant, you know, superstars in their own right. And there he is, a magnetic personality who really believes himself to be a great player. And up to that point, we didn't know Deion, the defensive player, because he had been, you know, in Cleveland, where he wasn't really asked to defend much, or maybe he just wasn't willing or capable. Who knows? And he really went out and said, you know, I want to be I'm a great defensive player. And everybody, the whole, you know, media scrum was looking at him like, we laughed because we thought it was so hilarious that he would mention that he wanted to be a great defensive player. That's not the role that anybody expected him to be. And sure enough, a year and a half later, he did wind up evolving into a solid defender. And I mean, for as far as his personality is concerned, Oklahoma City writers will certainly attest to it. I've seen him up close a couple times. He's funny. He's honest, and I think he's just an interesting guy. And a lot of people have talked about it before, but it probably behooves our audience to know. For all the criticism and all the crap that, you know, NBA Twitter and the joke about Deion, he's been through quite a lot. He's lost, I think, 4 or 5 close cousins and relatives, friends, growing up in a really hard part of town around Philly. And despite that, this is a guy who could have gone the complete opposite route, and he's become an NBA success story. Look, he had a great career at Syracuse. You know, he's had a solid NBA career so far. He's still only 5 years into his NBA career.
He's only 24.
And he's already gone through the turmoil of Cleveland. Right. Yeah, he's a really young guy. There's potential there, you know. And, you know, even you and I have joked about it at times that he's a great player who will wind up in China at some point, because that's the, you know, that's the joke, that's the narrative, you know. But he can turn it around. He can become a focused NBA player. You're right. He's absolutely still very young. He can still focus on his, you know, making his basketball career more consistent. And there are great moments there. He can do a lot of things very well. There are going to be moments that'll leave Heat fans kind of scratching their heads. But the more you see it, I just hope. My perspective is that I just hope that people won't go in there buying that narrative and thinking that this is the player that they'll get. And then every time he makes a mistake, saying, there goes Deion Waiters.
He's either going to be a player that fans hate or a player that fans love. And I think that, you know, Mario Chalmers was one of those guys that Heat fans are almost split into different camps. Like, you have the guys that love Chalmers and the guys that hate him. Antoine Walker was a lot like that too. I think Deion Waiters just kind of he's taking that baton, you know?
He's going to make the team infinitely more interesting, one way or the other, and I think that's great, especially in a team like this where there's so many questions and we don't know exactly where they'll fit, whether they're rebuilding or not. He's gonna make the team more interesting, and you're gonna see this. The Heat fans are gonna be pleasantly surprised at great moments. Are there gonna be some times there when he misses a layup or passes out of bounds? Sure, but who the hell hasn't done that? It's the NBA. Guys are gonna make mistakes.
And you talked about the Twitter makes fun of him. He's an easy target. I mean, I think when he does things like that, you know, people magnify in on that, and they said, "Well, that's just Deion Waiters." Where Russell Westbrook does that stuff just as much. But his positives shine so much brighter than his negatives as far as a spectacle that, you know, you tend to look at. And there are people that hate on Russ and have been, and it's more recently that people start to love Russell Westbrook. But I think there's things that Waiters can do well, and I really do think that what he does well outweighs what he takes away, especially if he's playing defense the way he did. I mean, the guy's 6'4", 225.
And that's very generally listed as far as, I mean, generously.
Sure, but he's kind of the same size as a Marcus Smart, who is regarded as one of the top perimeter defenders in the NBA. He's a thick-bodied guy. I'm not saying Deion Waiters is that just because of his size, but he's got a similar size, to Marcus Smart.
I agree.
And maybe the Heat can start to mold him. And for once, I mean, get a coach that is really interested in his development, where he had Mike Brown and that shit show that was the Cavaliers, right?
Absolutely.
And then Billy Donovan, who was more... Not a bad coach, but in his first year in the NBA, and likely a lot more caught up in trying to figure out the Durant-Westbrook dynamic and just keep Durant in Oklahoma City. His priority probably wasn't, okay, let me try to get Deion Waiters to reach his potential. His priority was more like, I've got 3 or 4 guys at shooting guard, just one of them needs to be good. And now for once, Waiters is going to be in a position where he's a priority to be developed by a good coach, Eric Spoelstra, and a good coaching staff underneath him. I think Chris Quinn can work with Dion Waiters really well as far as decision makings and seeing the floor. I think that's what Chris Quinn's specialty has been as a coach so far, and I think that's going to help. I mean, we saw Chris Quinn do that with guys like Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson and Tyler Johnson already. Waiters is just going to join that side of the court during practice and just join those guys in doing those kind of things. I think as far as his personality goes, he's that irrational confidence, believes he's the best player on the floor, very much like Chalmers. The thing we always said about Chalmers, right, was that, yes, he's irrationally confident. He thinks that he's the fourth member of the Big Four with LeBron, Bosh, and Wade. That was his personality. But that's the kind of guy you want at the end of a basketball game, who is not afraid to take that shot and is confident that when he takes that shot that it's going to go in. If he gets the ball, you want him to think that he can get that shot no problem. You want that at the end of games. And with Wade gone, Waiters becomes even more important with that personality because, yes, they have Whiteside, but he's not a shooter. They have Goran Dragic, who might be more of a, who's likely to play more of a facilitating role this season, as well as a scoring role. But we don't know what we're going to get with Dragic, and he's only one guy. You need guys that are confident, who are going to be willing and wanting to take that shot in the final seconds, where that's basically been Dwayne Wade's role for the last 13 seasons.
Right. So for better or for worse, you knew he was going to get the ball at the end of the games. And oftentimes, I mean, for as much as we loved Wade and there were some clutch moments, there were a lot of moments there where he took a bad shot at the end of the games. Yeah. And it's interesting that you bring up the Chalmers comparison, which makes a lot of sense because Miami fan base was so split by you know, how they perceived Chalmers. But then he goes to Memphis and he's beloved there. In the short time that he spent there, a lot of fans were like, what the hell? Why all the negative criticism? He went there, he played hard, he was able to take the ball to the rim. He was able to shoot from outside. He had a game winner, things that he would have wanted to do in Miami and just never had the opportunity to because he was either a rookie during, the best years of Wade's career or part of, of the Big Three era. So he wasn't necessarily going to be the guy to take that shot. But he goes into a Memphis Grizzlies team that was beat up by injuries, that needed something, some kind of a boost. And hell if he didn't provide it. So I'm glad to see that.
Can kind of provide this a similar thing for the Heat, right? Finally in a situation where maybe he's not only wanted but needed.
Yeah. It's not a bad comparison. And it's a good ceiling for him to reach. And I think I'm confident that he can. I mean, I've seen him up close. He's explosive. He's got incredible athleticism. I mean, for his height, he can still dunk in traffic. I mean, look, does he miss a layup? Sure. I mean, maybe he does. Maybe he gets a little distracted at times. I don't know. I mean, I think it's overblown. The numbers, probably I have not looked them up. I'll be honest with you. I haven't looked them up. I'm sure it probably behooves us to do so. I kind of don't want to because I'm confident that he's a lot better than the numbers say or that the perception is. But I think he's going to be a great fit here. But now the question then comes. And a lot of people were concerned. I think there were some rumors attached to when he first came here that maybe he was promised a starting job.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to be the case. Yeah. I don't necessarily see him as a starter, and I don't think that he's been promised a starting job. That doesn't seem like something this front office or Spoelstra would ever do. And I think Pat Riley is.
I agree with you.
Yeah. I think Riley has said a number of times he doesn't get involved in telling Spoelstra how to manage his players or the roster. He just builds the team as best he can and lets Spoelstra handle it one way or the other.
There was a celebration, right, at the beginning when the Heat signed Waiters. Not a celebration, but an excitement. This is really interesting, right? Because Heat fans have a tendency to be like, fill in big player name here. Is he a possibility for the Heat? Like, Heat fans always think, okay, well, this guy's available. Kevin Love's available. Should the Heat trade for him? Almost like every single time somebody becomes available, Waiters is available and becomes an unrestricted free agent and within a few hours basically signs with the Heat. And now there was an initial excitement and then that report came out that the Heat promised him a starting job.
I didn't get that feeling at all. I didn't get it. What I saw was more of the dread of, oh no, here we go again. We're signing this player and basically we're effectively tanking the season or something along those lines. I didn't see any excitement there. I'm surprised that
wasn't the right word. Maybe there was a lot of chatter. Just like it, basically the Waiters story took over, and then so excitement not in the positive way. Excitement in that we're all going to talk about this now.
Curiosity maybe more than anything.
Curiosity, sure. But
he's
then,
a biggish name,
that news
right?
Broke, I mean, and everybody was just anybody that was positive about it was like, oh, he shouldn't be starting. But I agree with you. The Heat aren't going to promise anybody a starting job. The Heat have never been that way, right? The Heat have even said, I think, what was it? Spoelstra's comment in regards to what Stoudemire said at the end of the year, that Stoudemire didn't want, thought he'd be playing more. And Spoelstra said, we want guys that believe that they should be playing more. Those are the guys we want at the end of our bench, not you know, basically not getting all those minutes. We want guys that want more minutes. Like, that's a good thing. Right. And so, I think that maybe the Heat said something to Waiters where, okay, yes, you're going to sign for $2.9 million. It's not going to be a lot of money, but you have an opportunity to win the job. And I think that's what it's going to be. And maybe when the reports got leaked through, you know, he said, she said type thing, that the report becomes Waiters was told
guaranteed that he had a spot,
starting job. But I think the reality is going to be that Waiters will compete with Josh Richardson and Tyler Johnson for that starting two guard spot. And I think you and I will come to the conclusion, and I think most people that know Deion Waiters' game believe that he's best as a six man. And I think Josh Richardson is going to be the starter there.
Yeah, I think Richardson still plays a starting role because I think he's a better, longer defender than Waiters or Tyler Johnson. And so I think, similarly to what you and I talked about in the past, that Tyler Johnson could come off the bench, be that third guy, that third guard off the bench to kind of replace, you know, Goran in the starting lineup, you know, to fit alongside Richardson, who would then slide down to the point position and have Tyler play off ball. I think Deion could fit that role just as well. And Deion is a capable facilitator for all the, you know, narrative again about him hogging the ball. He's a fine, adequate passer. You know, he does look to create his shot, but hell, that's what you want from him. That's what you want from most guys in the NBA. You don't want necessarily just facilitators. Look,
especially a shooting guard.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, you know, you brought up the Westbrook comparison, and that's the whole thing, is that Westbrook was a point guard who didn't really facilitate much. And look, he's still fighting that narrative years later, despite the fact that he's led the league in triple doubles for the last two seasons, and he's averaged, you know, almost 10 plus assists per game. I mean, he clearly creates shooting opportunities for other players. You know, those assist numbers back those up, and yet he's still fighting that stigma of being a shooting first guard. You know, and that's ridiculous.
I think Waiters, even if we're talking about lineups, he could. I mean, if Bosch isn't able to go, Winslow slides down to the four. Richardson could play small forward, and then Waiters plays the two spot next to either Tyler Johnson or Goran Dragic if the starters are in. And that's an interesting lineup, because now you have Waiters, Richardson, and Winslow all on the floor together. That could be something really exciting, a cool small ball lineup that they can run out with. I think that that's probably the best situation for Deion Waiters, is coming off the bench as a six man. Richardson, for the Heat in general, like, you have Richardson as the two guard, the starting two guard. He's long, he's a versatile defender. If the Heat are going to play more of a modern style of basketball, you want guys that could switch on defense more. And not to say Waiters can't do that, we just got done talking about how he's improved defensively, but Richardson is much better at doing that. Waiters could probably guard positions 1 through 2 and maybe smaller small forwards in switching situations. Richardson can guard all positions 1 through 3, you know, naturally. And I think that's probably the best position for the Heat.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, like I mentioned, you know, him being able to guard Green, he can switch on to even smaller power forwards on occasion. So I think when you're looking at, you know, small ball lineups, versatility, both on offense and defense, he certainly fits the bill. And I think he's going to be a nice fit. You know, the narrative is one thing. I'm just looking for fans that be a little bit more open as far as how he'll fit onto this team. I think it's not, I don't think it's a bad decision for Miami. I think it's a great low risk, high reward kind of fit, and I think he's going to be a good player here next season. Personally, I hope he capitalizes. I feel for him because of the whole narrative, because I've seen him up close and in person, and kind of felt that magnetism from him as far as his personality is concerned. And you know, I think he's going to be a really good player, and he's a very capable player. So
I like that he has this opportunity to also correct his image. Not that he has to, or that he even cares about it, but he does have this opportunity just from a Twitter sphere perspective. You and I are active enough on Twitter that we see people just blast him all the time for every little thing that he does wrong. It'll be really cool to see him maybe have a chance here to win over some fans.
Yeah, I agree. I think, yeah, I think if you're not familiar with Deion Waiters' game and you've only seen what you want to see in a 7-second vine or something like that, of him calling for the ball, sure, he's going to call for it. That doesn't mean he's going to pout. That doesn't mean he's going to just, you know, check himself out of games. He's going to be active and engaged, and he's going to fit in there. He does need, you know, he did look to Durant, you know, on times to kind of guide him and stuff like that. But again, a lot of that was his youth. He's still going to have veterans in Goran Dragic and even Hassan Whiteside. And certainly, you know, Udonis Haslem will be out there kind of helping him along the way. And I think he's going to be a nice fit. I can't help but say, you know, that I believe he's going to be a good fit for Miami. So
he's going to be a great fit in that locker room, I think. And I think a lot of fans wonder if he will be. They see that his attitude, he's one of these guys that is labeled as an attitude problem because he's always calling for the ball. And that he might be a locker room cancer, so to speak. But I think he's going to be, for all the reasons that you're talking about, he's been through some stuff. Like, he wants to do well. He gave up money, reportedly, to find a good situation. Like, this is a guy that is that seems like he's going to embrace the Heat locker room, the Heat culture, and is going to try to take advantage of it. Because now, for the first time in forever, Dion Waiters' contract year. That's exciting all in itself. So I do think that if you look at the Heat in just a more broad perspective, not just Dion Waiters, these young assets that they've kind of just suddenly within a year and a half basically accumulated, Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson, Tyler Johnson, Hassan Whiteside is a young asset, and now Dion Waiters. This is a team that when LeBron James left them, had zero assets. They basically had a couple of first-round picks that they were able to trade and turn that into Goran Dragic, and that was it. And all of a sudden, they have a bad year, they get into the lottery, they get Winslow, they steal Josh Richardson in the second round, they dig up Tyler Johnson and Hassan Whiteside, they're able to sign a 24-year-old Dion Waiters on the cheap in a contract year.
Right.
There are a lot... The Heat are suddenly in a position, not that they're going to make a trade, but that they could make a trade if they wanted to. And now, and even Goran Dragic, on his contract, and at 30 years old, but a young 30 years old, because he didn't play so much in the beginning of his career, he's an asset. You know, he's making $15 million a year, where guys like Timofey Mozgov are making $4 million more per season.
Right. And you know what? You can look at it from one perspective and maybe be pessimistic about it, and maybe it's our Heat fandom kind of shining through. But to me, I see all these guys between him, you know, Dion, James Johnson, you know, Derek Williams, et cetera. These are guys that still have something to prove.
Right.
And I think when you have that kind of hunger and a good developmental coaching staff that we've seen the Heat possess, I think that's a wonderful combination. And again, and you're not looking to compete for a title because I think that's wholly unrealistic. I think it doesn't matter. Even if we had re-signed, you know, Dwayne Wade, even if Chris Bosh came back, I don't think that would have made us a legitimate threat to what they've built in Golden State. I don't think any team can really be a legitimate threat. So what you're looking for this year is quality play out of everybody you have. You're looking for who can define themselves more completely and consistently, and you've got guys who are looking to do it. It could be a recipe for disaster. It could be guys all about themselves and kind of falling apart, but you tend to feel that this coaching staff will get everybody to play together and kind of buy into that team concept and not necessarily look for their own numbers and things of that sort. So to me, I like the fit of all these guys who are hungry and willing to prove themselves.
You've got guys that have room between where they are now and their ceiling. Guys that can be better. Guys that can, and this is very rare, outperform their contract that they signed this summer. And that's very, very, very rare in what just happened this offseason with the spiked salary cap. So, all in all, like, the Heat are in a healthy position despite just losing Dwayne Wade, despite not knowing what's going on with Bosch. They're in a healthy position, and Heat fans for years now, ever since basically the Big Three, were saying we need more young guys, more young assets, guys that can, you know, reach their potential and not be good for a season or two and then fall off. That's exactly what they have now. So Heat fans have, in some way, got their wish. And I think this is a really interesting and exciting position for the Heat to be in. They're not going to be better than they were last season, I don't think, but they certainly are going to – they've basically rebounded from the loss of Dwayne Wade now in a positive way that is not tanking. They're going to be somewhere middling, you know, around. They might, they're going to be a fringe playoff team, but they're in a healthy position with some real – assets, some young stars like Winslow and Whiteside, and there's only room to grow from here. And if some of these guys can pan out, I mean, you talked about James Johnson, Derek Williams, Tyler Johnson, all these guys. Maybe if you kind of consider where they were last year, this team's not very good, but if you even give all of those guys a marginal improvement, or maybe one of those two guys a big leap forward, maybe a guy like Winslow and Deion Waiters take a big leap forward, all of a sudden this team is really interesting and can maybe sort of resemble the Trailblazers from last year.
Yeah, and, I agree.
I don't know, man. I'm excited. You said it before. Regardless of how Waiters pans out, it's going to be exciting, and I'm just excited for this team. I mean, I think this is an open canvas for the Heat this season, and there's not really any rules in place. You don't have to give the ball to Dwayne Wade at the end of games now. There's no it's going to be a lot of figuring it out, but that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you know, I think you just said it best, to be honest with you. I was going to keep adding to that, but you know what? You're absolutely right. There's excitement there, and I mean, you know, I think their ceiling is probably not a title, and we know that. We accept that. And look, there are only a certain number of teams every year who are legitimate title contenders, and Miami isn't one of them this year, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they won't be a fun, interesting team to watch, and I think we're going to see a lot of quality play out there. There's going to be some bumps along the road, but you know what? That's what you get when you have a young team that's looking to develop and kind of find a way to mesh together. So there's a lot of pieces to find out how to fit together, and it's going to be an interesting one, if nothing else.
Waiters Peninsula is here.
Yes.
What color jersey did you order in the mail? White, red, black?
One of each.
Perfect. All right. Well, that's all we have for you guys today. Thanks for listening to Locked On Heat. We are going for the rest of this month of August to a bi-weekly show, so we'll be with you twice a week. Maybe we'll throw in a third every once in a while if something cool happens or if we're feeling like it, but we're going to try to cut down the podcast during this slow month for a little bit, so just keep that in mind. Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Basketball Network. Find us on Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes, Audio Boom. Am I missing anything? Tune In Radio. We're there now, too. Anywhere that you listen to podcasts, you could find us, rate us, review us, say nice things about us on iTunes. It really helps. And we'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, Dave.
You got it, Wes. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Look, I don't know how to talk to you. I don't know how to ask you if you're okay. My friends always feel the need to tell me things. Seems like they're just happier than us these days. Yeah. These days, I don't know how to talk to you. I don't know how to be there when you need. It feels like the only time you'll see.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.